How do we know which traditions to keep and which ones we can safely ignore? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. As we continue to study the topic of Christ and His law, and with me again as my conversation partners are Dave Thomas from the School of Theology and Joe Galusha, Professor of Biology. Let me take that question. How do we know? Maybe we could apply it to Jesus. How did Jesus know which traditions he should keep and which ones he could safely ignore?
I don't know how to answer your question, Alden, because how would you answer it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have to answer that because I'm the host and I can ask you guys. No, let's just take a look at some of the things where Jesus related now to Jewish tradition, because when we discuss this type of thing, you have the Decalogue, which is by itself, and then the additional laws of Moses, Deuteronomy 4, 13, and 14, is a marvelous passage because it distinguishes between the Decalogue, which applied to everyone, was written on stone, and the additional statutes and ordinances, which were given to explain and illustrate the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's biblical. That's clear. But then you come after the exile, after Israel returned from Babylonian captivity. They finally realized that they went into captivity because they hadn't kept the law. And so they went about making sure that the law would be kept. And the phrase is used there, they made a fence about the law. So, for example, 39 major ways of breaking the Sabbath, they would specify those, spell them out, so that you would make sure that you're one step short of actually breaking the law. Law says you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. They said, easy, we won't even use his name. And that still links today. So you have this layer of rabbinic laws, well-intentioned, and how did Jesus relate to those? That's my question, okay? Now, let's just survey a few things that are mentioned in the official study guide here. He talks about in Matthew 23, he's talking to the scribes and the Pharisees, and he talks about the seat of Moses. These people sit in the seat of Moses. And then he says, you should do what they tell you, but don't do as they do, but do as they tell you. Now, that's really quite intriguing for Jesus to say about the Pharisees, yeah, do what they say. Don't follow their example, but do what they say.
Because we usually say that the other way around.
That's right. That's right. Mm. And then the disciples were challenged by the authorities for not washing their hands. Now, as I understand it, the washing hands was very carefully defined, how you take water and pour down on one side and then the other side and you let it drip off. The disciples weren't doing that. And so they challenged Jesus, and it's in that context that Jesus tells how they had used their rabbinic commands to avoid the law. And he's talking here particularly about the command that says, you shall honor your father and your mother. But if you dedicate a portion of your property to the temple, then you don't have any things to give to your parents, you see. And so that's where Jesus said you make of no value the commands of God because of the traditions of the elders.
But see, Alden, isn't that, it's interesting to think about how traditions and why traditions are built up. Usually they have a particular reason behind them. Mm-hmm. And that reason, I think, is oftentimes noble and good. Mm-hmm. But as time passes and circumstances change, it might well be that the reason for which that tradition was established is lost. I mean, one of my favorite stories comes from Tsarist Russia, where somebody noticed a soldier standing outside a building, standing guard, so to speak, and didn't know why they were there. And upon investigation, discovered that many years before, a rose bush had been planted there, and in order to not be trampled, a guard had been posted. Well, the rose bush had long since died, but they were still posting a guard there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, see, so it seems to me, how do we know which ones to keep and which not? I think you have to do a little bit of investigation, understand the reason why, and sometimes you keep those merely for social niceties. Why do we do certain things at Thanksgiving in the United States? Well, it's a historical thing. Why do we burn candles at Christmas time? I mean, I don't know that there's any particular reason for that, but there are social customs that have been enduring, and I think as long as they don't violate higher principles or more noble principles, there's probably no harm in them.
Now, let me pick up an illustration I've heard you tell about a number of times.
Do I want to hear this?
Yeah, you probably do. You moved into a new church as a pastor.
Yes.
And you wanted to change the starting time for Sabbath school.
The ending time, actually.
Oh, the ending time.
Yes.
Okay. And what happened?
The roof came down upon my head because I was in the minds of a couple of older people. I was altering the order of the universe without permission. Mm-hmm. And so it became quite a lesson for me.
Yeah.
There's a more difficult one that comes to my mind, and that is I grew up with a very strong sense of reverence in God's sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And in recent years, our young people have treated it as God's living room. Come meet us there. And part of the way they come is with hats, male young men these days wearing hats. And as they come in, I look and I say, I am glad they're coming to God's house. But the tradition that I came from says, couldn't they take their hats off?
A man
off?
Would never wear a hat in a building. Yeah,
that's right.
And so here is what I think is a custom that at one time meant a very important issue when you met with someone of significance, the king or the president or someone, take off the hat, maybe even bow. Our young people today are coming home, coming to the living room,
yeah,
and they still have their hats on. And I am wondering whether what Jesus would have done. Would he have said,
take your hats off?
Well, if it's a sign of disrespect, it's a serious problem, but you see this changes. You may remember, Joe, when Dr. Sorensen came back as president here, and he walked into the church sanctuary and saw all these hats, and he was ready to have the chapel authorities, you know, stop people at the door. And they said, no, we're not going to die on that mountain, see. Well, finally, he did give a little speech, and it was very nicely done. He simply said, in our tradition and so on. And I asked sometime later in my class how many of them remembered that, see. And they almost all had. And one of the students spoke up, and I think this shows the challenge we face when you have rebels dealing with authority. He said, I didn't have my hat on, but when I heard him give his speech,
I started wearing it.
Put it back on right in the church, see. So that gets into the question, how do we know which traditions to keep and where we can safely ignore? Let me give another passage here from Matthew 23, which seems an interesting one to me. Jesus, it's in Matthew 23 again, he says, you pay tithe of mint, anise, and cumin. It's verse 23, chapter 23. You pay tithe of mint, anise, and cumin, and ignore the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness.
Mm.
But then he says, these ought you to have done without leaving the other undone. So he's saying you ought to have justice, mercy, and faithfulness, but you should also pay tithe of mint, anise, and cumin. So what do we make of that? All the rules should be kept?
Well, I think that the first one is that you should not, the weightier ones bear more significance than the smaller ones, but that doesn't mean you should ignore the smaller ones.
And if you look only at the smaller ones, I would say that you're in great danger of missing the principle involved.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me just give an example of this. You know, and this has to do with Adventist tradition in particular and the role of Ellen White, who was speaking to modesty issues in her day, 19th century. One point she says, the small bonnets which expose the face and the head show a lack of modesty. And if you go to any Adventist church anywhere, it's a rare thing. I mean, they've not only gone to small bonnets, they've dumped the bonnets completely, see.
But she also told women to raise the length of their skirts, which was probably scandalous too. But she did that for health reasons. They were dragging on the ground otherwise.
But you wouldn't want to say, across the board, raise your skirt levels today. See, that would be...
That's for sure.
But you see, what Ellen White was concerned about was perceptions of modesty. And if you just wear, and I was going up to give a seminar at Spokane a number of years ago, and I was chattering away with the pastors. We were heading to the church, and I mentioned this small bonnets one as to how people can miss it. And he simply said the Jeannie Cook movement, all the women wear small bonnets. See? So they had taken the specifics.
Yeah.
And they had missed the larger principle, and I think that's what Jesus wants us to do. And some of these specifics, it's hard for anybody, a creature of habit, to change anything. The more ancient I get, the more reluctant I am to change anything. But that's certainly one of the key issues.
So is one of the criteria for deciding whether or not you keep a tradition the amount of trouble it causes if you don't keep it?
I would be inclined to say yes.
Yeah.
I think that's an important factor. Yeah. Also, what is it trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
That's the core question that I would have. I'd come back with things that are not an obvious part of the moral law. And I would say, what are we trying to do with this? What function does it have in either our culture or our society? Mm-hmm. And then I'd decide whether that was a major issue. Even this issue of hats in church. Last Friday night, I simply saw several young men stand up and praise God, and they had hats on. And most of us...
So you discovered it's possible to praise God with a hat on, Joe.
That is what I learned in my own church. It was difficult for me, but I was deeply moved. And I simply believe that another generation, a different cultural perspective on things that are not central to the moral law are open to change.
But central to the moral law has to do with how do you treat other people? For this is the law and the prophets.
And so I might counsel my young friends, could you wear your hat at Vespers, which is what they were doing, and not in classic second serve?
Now, this is a very nasty comment for me, Joel. I happen to know that some faculty members come into Vespers after the music. What would you say of that?
I'd say that they were working with their soul and that they wanted to – they were growing and developing interests.
But I'm interested in this idea. I grew up with silence when you come to church, you know. And I've come to realize that actually we should not look at a Christian church like a temple. It's much more like a synagogue. It's a place of gathering. And so, you know, that helped me a lot in shifting that particular tradition.
Now, next week we're going to be moving into the Sermon on the Mount, but I want us to read the verse from Matthew 5, which comes just before the comments. Well, it has to do with fulfilling the law. But Jesus says, I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, if you think of law as the number of things on your list, then I think you're going to be in some difficulty. But our time is up. I want to thank Dave and Joe for helping with our conversations, and my thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.